So today I'm going to be presenting some work that I worked on predominantly as part of my PhD at the University of Utah. And what we did is we applied a particle-based method to meshing surfaces in multi-material volumes. And my particles are semi-free, but I do think they're fairly happy. So first, multi-material data. Increasingly, people that do physically-based simulations are relying on data captured from real-world objects for increasing realism. And most times, this data is coming from volumetric scanning devices such as MRI and CT. And these devices allow you to capture the internal structure of natural objects as well as the varying material properties inside. Now, extracting geometry from these types of data sets is challenging for a number of reasons. And the first one is that for simulations, the geometry needs to be high quality, which means that you want a set of nearly regular elements representing your geometry that really accurately capture that geometry as well as the topology. Now, this is challenging with these data sets because typically the boundaries between the materials, these intersections of materials we're interested in, are not smooth manifolds. And furthermore, these materials are most often represented as discrete labels. So in previous work, the majority of the previous work on this type of data has been grid-based, where they work directly on the discretely labeled data. And this comes with the problem that grid-based methods tend to produce a lot of triangles that can be fairly poorly shaped. And also this requires a post-processing step to smooth the voxelization artifacts. Sort of on the other hand, there has been quite a bit of work in the last couple of years on generating high-quality surface meshes of single materials. But to date, most of these methods don't actually tackle the multi-material problem. The exception to this is a method that came out last year from Pons et al., where they use a Delaunay refinement technique to extract surfaces in these data sets. The drawback to this is that Delaunay refinement doesn't guarantee that you're going to capture the sharp features between boundaries. So this is kind of what drove the ideas behind our work. And the approach that we're taking is, first of all, is we want to get away from the discretization artifacts that you end up in a mesh with a mesh if you work directly on the labeled volume. So the first thing we do is we generate a continuous representation of the multi-material volume and these non-manifold surfaces between the materials. And we represent these material junctions analytically and define projection operators onto these non-manifold junctions so that we can then sample these junctions with dynamic particles in an ordered way that allows for a very even sampling across these surfaces. Finally, we use these particles with a Delaunay-based labeling algorithm in order to extract watertight surface meshes of these intersections. And I'll explain each of these bullet points in more detail throughout the rest of my talk. So first of all, multi-material data. This is a simple 2D example. And what we do is we get the data we were working with was segmented data. And so we get the segmented data. We do a bit of binary morphology in the beginning as a pre-processing step to get rid of very small features. We then separate out each one of the materials into a separate binary volume. And we run a method called tightening, which is a method that produces a smooth distance transform we run this on each material separately. We then take these sets of functions that describe each one of our materials and combine them. And then the multi-material model we use goes something like this. It says that for every location in our volume, we assign a label I if the function I is greater than all the other functions in that volume. Now, what this means is this means that our intersections or the boundaries between these materials are occurring at the maximal material transitions, shown here by the dashed lines and the points. So, for example, the red dashed line is what we call a two-junction here in 2D, an edge that separates materials F1 and F2, and the point P is a three-junction. Now, as a quick aside about the topology of these multi-material junctions, because this sort of drives some of the assumptions going into our system, there's this notion of generic junctions, which is very, very analogous to the idea of general position in geometry. And what this says is that In 2D, you see in A that we have three materials. And if you slightly perturb that three junction in the middle, as we do here in B, you maintain the topology of those junctions. However, in C, we have a four junction. And when we perturb that slightly, the four junction slips to form two junction and three junctions. So in R3, what this means is that two junctions are going to be sheets, three junctions are going to be edges, four junctions will be points, and beyond that, we don't you can't actually have junctions of 5 points or more due to this notion of being generic. So the way that we build these multi-material intersections is we define this F tilde function. And what this F tilde function says is that for any one of my materials, if my F tilde is positive, then I have that material. If it's negative, it's some other material that exists there. And it is zero right at these intersections. So from this definition, we build something that we call the junction indicator function to explicitly define zero sets on just those junction boundaries. And so these junction functions are a summation of squares of the individual F tildes. So the first one shown here on the top is a two junction, followed by a three junction, and then a four junction. And so really quick, just because I think particle systems are becoming sort of a loaded term, the particle system that we've been using looks something like this. We project a series of particles or points onto a surface, doing a gradient descent. We then, for each one of these points, we apply a little energy kernel, which induces interparticle forces, so these particles are pushing against each other. And the system reaches a steady state when everyone's pushing on everyone equally. We also can adapt adapt the density of particles by scaling the distances between them. And this is really important for meeting sampling requirements for doing the meshing. Okay, so now we want to be able to actually sample these junctions with particles. And so the first thing that you run into is the fact that these F tilde functions contain max. And so because we need a continuous representation, because we need to take derivatives of these functions, we have an approximation to max, which is continuous. And the second thing is that these junction indicator functions actually are non-manifold, and they have a minimum at the zero set, which means that the derivatives are actually disappearing. So we need a way to project particles onto the surface itself. So what we do is we have the observation that the F tilde functions, their zero sets coincide with the zero set of the junction functions. So we use the gradient information from the F tildes to build a local orientation for the junction indicator functions for projecting particles onto them. So third is that we actually sample these junctions in an ordered scheme with these sets of particles. So what that means is if you look at the image all the way on the left, you can see two little black particles bounding the purple ones. And so those are actually four junctions. So we sample all four junctions first with a single particle. And then we fill in between by sampling with sets of particles along the three junctions on the edges. And then from there, we fill in with the two junctions, which are the sheets. Okay, so then once we have that, we apply a labeling algorithm. And what we do here is we take our sets of particles, and again, this is in 2D, but the idea is extended to 3D, and we do a Delaunay triangulation on these points. We then compute the circumcircle centers of each one of these triangles, figure out which material they lie within, and label the triangles according to those material types. And then we can extract a watertight surface by extracting all the edges or triangles in 3D that are bounded by triangles or tetrahedral elements of varying material types. Some results. On the left, we have a brain data set that has about 350,000 triangles. And what I'm showing for the metrics are the radius ratios, which is a common metric for defining how regular a triangle is. The numbers range from 0 to 1, where 1 equals a perfectly regular triangle. So I'm showing the minimum radius ratio, which is actually quite good, and an average radius ratio that is fairly close to 1. The lower right hand is a simple toy example that we generated to sort of illustrate how we get consistent boundaries. You can extract the intersections themselves, or you can actually extract each material as a separate surface. If you do this latter approach, you get consistent triangulations between the two materials. This was a much larger data set. This was a torso data set. We had four different materials here. And again, the radius ratios. And another data set, which was a frog segmentation with about 600,000 triangles. So this is what I sort of jokingly refer to as my gratuitous cute animal example. And jokes aside, I think it's actually a nice illustration of sort of the importance of modeling material properties. And what we did is we used the surfaces that we generated from this system, and then we had a point-based simulation where on the left-hand side, all the points were given the same material properties, and on the right, they were given varying material properties. For example, the bones were stiffer. And you can see sort of the differences that you can achieve when you're able to sort of capture the geometry and apply different material properties to these types of simulations. Just show it one more time. Left is a lot squishier. Okay, and so current and future work. So just last week, we presented some work at the meshing roundtable of some extensions of this that are going on at the University of Utah. And right now, what we're really looking at is extending these surface meshes and combining them with tetrahedralization algorithms to get the volumetric meshes and getting some very promising results here. And so in future work, we really want to investigate these tetrahedralization algorithms and perhaps also extend the particle system to sphere packing and see how that works. And the challenge here is dealing with something called slivers, and there's methods in the literature for dealing with these issues. We also, this approach is very computationally expensive at this point. Our largest data set, that torso, took on the order of a day to pre-process as well as sample with all the particles. And we really did not spend any time optimizing this. For example, the particle systems could be run in parallel, and also the pre-processing. There's some significant optimizations we can do there with the tightening algorithm. So that's really a big focus right now for us. So in conclusions, I'd like to acknowledge Claudia Silva, who really inspired a lot of this work, and Matt Jolly and Tolga Tazdizin for data sets. And I'll take any questions.
So we have time for questions.
I was wondering how you're assigning the material properties, and are you doing it from the data? For example, if you have density data already.
Right. So we start with already segmented data. So essentially, we get a segmentation that says, "Oh, these voxels are bone. These are lung. These are heart." So that's how we get those material properties. For the frog, I mean, that was really a lot of sort of, you know, hand tweaking parameters that didn't necessarily have a sort of physical basis.
It seems like it could have some really great applications for people that have like broken bones, and then they want to see how it mends and analyze its.
Sure, exactly. A driving application of this actually was with this torso data set, and it was with a cardiologist at Children's Hospital in Boston, and he wants to look at different places to place a defibrillator. And in that situation, they really want to use patient-specific data, so having sort of a whole pipeline for generating these types of meshes, and then all the way to the point of being able to visualize the results at the end. So I think in medicine, there's tons of interesting applications.
It's really cool.
Thanks. Yeah, so the system generalizes to any number of materials you have. The caveat to that is that the functions become increasingly more expensive to evaluate. That max function essentially has a product in it. So the more materials you have, the more expensive it is to evaluate those. But here we only looked at up to four different materials. But yeah, you can have as many as you'd like. Right. Okay. Yeah. So this is actually a really important point of our paper that I chose not to go into for time reasons, But we actually did a lot of work at looking at the angles going into these junctions, because when you use these Delaunay methods, they really rely upon this notion of densely enough sampled, which is based upon a medial axis, which is based upon these angles. But what we found was that by doing this ordered approach where we ensure that we're sampling along these sharp features, at least in 2D, we were able to do a proof that showed that if you have angles larger than 45 degrees, if you place a point directly on that feature, that using a Delaunay triangulation, you're guaranteed to get those edges in your final reconstruction. We didn't extend that to 3D, but based upon the empirical results here, we suspect that there's some sort of analogy there.
Well, if there's no other questions, let's thank Mariah.